everybody! Hey, everybody! I'm waving at all of you. How are you? I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to... What are we listening to? It's all about food. Oh, there's an echo in here.
It's all about food.
It's all about food.
Food, 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 food.
Food, food, food. Guess who I'm with here? Yes, you've guessed it. It's Gary DeMattei. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Karen. Happy Fat Tuesday.
Ah, Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras, c'est français.
Today is our Fat Tuesday show.
It's our Fat Tuesday show because today is Fat Tuesday.
And what is Fat Tuesday? It's Mardi Gras, for those of you who celebrate. Actually, traditionally, I think it's the last day before the 40 days and 40 nights of Lent.
Yes, you are my Christian and Catholic expert in this duo that we have here, because
yeah,
I don't know anything about it.
We have a perfect duo. I was raised Catholic. You were raised Jewish.
Yes.
And we're in therapy.
That show's already been done.
Right. That was a great solo performance piece.
By the way. Yes.
Yeah. My mother was Jewish, my father is Catholic, and I'm in therapy. Where my father was Catholic and my mother
was... It ran in New York for a while.
Yeah, it was one of our first dates.
Yeah.
And this is the Vegan Artist's Way series here at responsibleeatingandliving.com. So we're talking all about fun stuff today. And
it is Mardi Gras Day, February 25th. And as you said, it's the last day of the carnival season.
Right.
As it falls the day before Ash
Wednesday.
Which is the first day of Lent.
The Lenten fast means for 40 days and 40 nights, you're supposed to give up meat. And we think that's a good idea.
Me too. Yeah. I guess I've been in Lent for 46, 7 years. Yeah. I gave meat up a long time ago.
Right.
But I didn't do it for any religious reasons.
But the funny thing is, you're quite spiritual. Probably more spiritual than a lot of religious people I know.
Yes.
So, amen to that one. Yeah, so anyway, I remember growing up and, you know, they said you have to give things up. Why don't you give up meat, but eat fish instead? So that kind of is funny now because I think, give up all flesh and, you know, just stay in the Lenten fast forever because it's delicious.
It's delicious. Plant-based, to be vegan.
It's
good for us and good for the planet. I'm always curious. Now, I've said many times on this program, I don't mean to be offensive to anyone.
And you're not.
I am not a religious person. If any of you find inspiration in a religion and it makes you a better person, that's a wonderful thing.
Right.
I am not a religious person. I like making it up as I go along and doing things with integrity, with things that resonate to me as right, the right thing to do, not because someone told me, oh, you should do this. When I get into that voice, if anyone knows me, you know whose voice I'm imitating.
Right. Your mommy.
It's my mom. And all of us are given direction from our parents.
Right.
You should do this, you should do that. And some of it's good and some of it is challenging to us.
Right.
We're given boundaries so that we can bounce off of them and make informed choices.
Yeah.
I'm being really diplomatic here.
You are. Just go ahead. But it's okay. So if it's a day of letting it all go before the big Lenten fast, so let it all go. Tell us what you really think. I'm here to listen.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just wondering if Lent was one of these guilty reactions, or maybe people knew that they really shouldn't have been eating meat back then, because there are all kinds of religious references in all the religions that we shouldn't be eating flesh. But
yeah,
we ended up eating flesh, and so different religions came up with different ways to kind of compensate or get around. And maybe this is one way that we know we shouldn't be. So on this sacred time period, we're going to give it up just for a little while.
Right. Because we know it's wrong. And then we'll go back to being wrong.
Until next year, folks. Stay tuned.
Until the 40 days and 40 nights. But there was, as with all religions, there was an out clause, and that was you could eat fish. But we both know that eating fish is just like eating beef or chicken or pork or any of the other animals that are exploited and used for human consumption.
And we learned that where? In the movie Finding Nemo by Disney.
Right.
Where we learned that fish are your friends, not food.
Exactly. So why don't you just give it all up and instead of going to 40 days, go forever and you'll feel a lot better. And you'll be much more spiritual than those who think that what they're doing now is temporary, because it's not temporary. It should be forever. You shouldn't eat animals ever.
You may have more experience with this, but I know I've heard people who go through Lent and they, now more than ever, they give up something that they know they should give up.
Yeah, it's not just me. But
and then after that period is over, the response usually is, oh, I feel so good because I gave that up, whatever it was.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, you're supposed to give up candy, for example. You're supposed to give up chocolate, maybe, or something that you feel or consider decadent. Booze. A lot of people give up booze, but they use Fat Tuesday to just overconsume in all of those departments. It's a very, you know, Mardi Gras is very hedonistic, and that's because they're thinking, well, I'm not going to be able to do this for another 40 days and 40 nights. And so they have a hangover for 40 days and 40 nights. But they never want to touch the stuff again. So a lot of bars are going to be really, you know, going all out tonight. A lot of places, a lot of clubs will be. It's like a St. Patrick's Day kind of a.
Yes. You know. I want to stay on this subject, but take a little tiny detour in a humorous, joking way, Gary. But I'm thinking that after last night, you might want to give up chocolate.
Yeah. Well, it's a great segue. So last night we were doing some work, getting ready for, you know, our week. And it was late. And I had a few squares of dark chocolate. And I could not get to sleep afterwards.
Yeah. Gary is very sensitive to caffeine.
And this is all since going vegan, because I was like a 9, 10, 11 cup a day caffeine guy. And then on top of that, I drank a lot of Diet Coke, liters and liters and liters of it.
Right, you used to have a lot of caffeine, but and I mean, you had other issues back then. Were you ever able to sleep back then?
You know, I really didn't pay attention to it. Mm. But once going vegan, my body got rid of all of the toxins. Or most of the toxins.
And you have more vitality now.
More vitality, much more energy. And so a little caffeine goes a long way. So three squares of dark chocolate, I was just...
That kept you up all night.
I was on the ceiling all night.
No more chocolate for you.
At least not...
At least not at night.
Not at night. Unless I'm driving across country or something and then keep
there
the chocolate...
There you go.
Keep the chocolate coming. And it doesn't have to be a lot of chocolate because, I mean, this was a little bit of chocolate.
That's true.
This was endangered species chocolate. And three squares of that, and I was up all night. I was doing housework. I was, you know, cutting my 8x10 pictures and resumes and stapling them together. I was just, you know, I was going crazy.
Yes. Okay. So no more chocolate for Gary. Gary's giving up chocolate for Lent.
Yeah, I'm giving up chocolate for Lent.
Ha 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 ha.
No, but I mean, it's a good idea not to have it after 10 o'clock.
It's
for
a
me.
Good idea. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of good ideas about what not to do in the evening, either after 6 p.m. or 8 p.m. or 10 p.m., depending on when you got up in the morning and when you're going to wake up.
Right. Exactly.
Like one of the things that's trending, and I'm getting off the topic again, but intermittent fasting.
Right. You have a big thing about that now.
I do.
It's great. Don't eat. Let's let everybody know what intermittent fasting is all about, because it's fascinating.
So in the morning, most of us have something called breakfast. If you pronounce it differently, it's break fast.
Right.
Break fast. We're supposed to be fasting, and then we break it with some nourishment. And that fast should be around 12 to 16, even 18 hours, I'm hearing now, but at least 12, of no food. So from your last meal from the night before until your first meal the next day, you should have a fast of at least 12 hours. 16 is even better. That's half a day.
Yeah, and the little that I've been doing that, I feel terrific in the morning when that happens.
Me too.
Yeah, I feel very good.
And what it does, so the experts out there who study nutrition are learning more about digestion and the cycle of digestion and what occurs throughout the cycle when we put food in our mouth and between the next time we put food in our mouth. And there's a lot of things that go on. And one of the things that goes on is after the food is somewhat digested and is moving through the intestines, then the body cycles into this detoxing period where it takes the stuff that it doesn't want and sends it out. And you can break that cycle by snacking.
Right.
Or eating too soon.
Right.
And at night, that's the time when our body really does some serious detoxing, some rebuilding, restocking, rejuvenating. A lot of work is going on while we're asleep.
Right. Presumably asleep. Right.
Presumably asleep. That's why sleep is so important. And you have to give the body time to do all of that. And then you break the cycle, not just by waking up, but by eating.
Well, this is really good. I mean, this whole subject that we're on, the Fat Tuesday, the day before 40 days of fasting, all of that, it's a very good topic for our listeners today, because what we're talking about during the Lenten fast is actually fasting.
Fasting.
So what a great program we have today for everyone.
Is that surprising you?
Yeah.
We always learn something from these programs.
No, it's true. And it's almost like we planned it. Right? And well, we did plan it.
Surprise.
But we're circuitously getting this out to you. So you are an expert on fasting, as far as I'm concerned, because you've done a lot of fasting and you've gone to fasting. What was the place that you went to for fasting once, or you talked about it? That's what it was. You talked about a couple of places for fasting.
Sure. Well, I did.
So if people want to fast, if they want to detox their bodies, what's some good advice you can give people who are interested in taking this Lenten fast concept a little further?
Sure. Well, the first thing is, if you want to do Lent, that's fine. But think about something that you really want to give up, and with the ultimate goal of giving it up long term. But just to trick yourself, you're going to say you're going to do it for a short term, because that makes it easier.
Right.
We have to play games with ourselves, because our minds are always playing games on us, right? But there are different kinds of fasting. So there's intermittent fasting, which everyone can do, which is 12 to 16 to 18 hours between our last meal and our first meal in the morning.
So no more midnight snacks, no more responding to come hither texts from Domino's when you're streaming your Netflix. You have to turn your phone off. You have to not go and get the chips. You've got to really be diligent about, okay, I'm going to be watching a little TV tonight, but I'm not going to be feeding myself while I'm watching.
And for people who are really trying to lose weight, I think that's the easiest and first step that anyone should do. Because you're really not depriving yourself. You're still eating. But there's that time where you're giving yourself a break.
Right.
Okay. Then there are other kinds of fasts. And there are many kinds. I mean, I'm going to talk about the classic ones. You could do a juice fast.
Right.
And the thing about a juice fast is, what kind of juice are you going to be consuming? So you're having just juice, no food with fiber, no solid food, just juice. But what kind of juice are you going to have? And if you're going to do a juice fast, in my opinion, the best kind to do is a green juice fast, not necessarily a high fruit juice, high sugary fast.
Right.
You could maybe add a fruit or two to your green juice, but you want it to be
primarily
green. Primarily green.
Right.
Primarily now, vitamins and minerals.
Right. So would you say that, how long would you say someone should do a juice fast?
Well, that's
fast?
A really great question. So some people could do a fast for a day. You could do it for 2 days. You could do it for a week. You could do it for 2 weeks. I don't know that you want to prolong a juice fast for too long.
Mm-hmm.
there might be some medical reasons to do that for a certain length of time, but not for much longer.
Keyword,
and I'm not, you know, the doctor.
We're not doctors here, right? Keyword, medical reasons. So are there medical doctors out there that promote juice fasting?
I believe there are. So, but there are also people that promote water-only fasts. So
right.
We have to talk about that too. And there are different places you can go to for one and the other, or one or the other.
Right.
There are all kinds of facilities out there. So I know that True North Health Center in Santa Rosa, California does water fasts.
Right. And that's Dr.
That's Dr. Alan Goldhammer.
Right. And he was Goldhammer was just in the movie.
Was he in The Game Changers?
He was, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Or he was in What the Health? He was in one of those two.
Yeah.
You should watch them both.
He's a chiropractor.
Right.
And he's built a really nice place over there. And not only do they do water fasting to help people heal, but they also do a lot of events where they have cooking demos and show people how to prepare food when they come off the fast, or just for those who want to learn more about food prep. And I've interviewed him. I've got...
And fasting is primarily to get rid of all the toxins in your bodies and to start clean.
That's... Yes.
The inflammation...
Yes. Clear it out.
The
and
inflammation
it's not just
caused by certain foods.
Food, but also we live in a toxic world.
Mm-hmm.
So even if we're eating as clean as we can, we're breathing.
Right.
And just breathing brings in stuff because we can't control our environment.
Sure. Okay, so that's the extreme side of fasting. But a great way to start is by saying, I'm not going to eat after a certain time because I want to at least go 12 hours without any food.
Now, some people will skip eating for a day. They'll do one day a week, they won't eat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine, too.
That's okay.
That's okay. What you want to do always is drink water.
Right.
I never recommend not doing anything, doing any of these things and not drinking water. Water is always necessary.
Right. So be careful. Of course, you want to consult a physician before you do any of this.
Yes.
And we are not physicians.
No.
Although we have played them on TV. But
yes. And what, you know, the fact that this is Mardi Gras, this is a really important time to bring this up. If you really want a fast, a serious fast, I mean, I don't know if you're going to do Lent and give something up, but if you want to do a juice fast or a water fast, you absolutely do not, I repeat, you do not want to party your brains out before you start this fast. That's the worst thing you could possibly do. You want to ease into a fast. And that means start by eating healthier before you fast. That means reducing sugar, oil, and salt.
Mm-hmm.
That means eating more fiber, eating more vegetables, and eating more fruits and vegetables, reducing meat and dairy and processed foods before you start the fast. I can't say that enough. Because if you start a fast after a major party, I can't tell you what kind of nightmare you're in for.
Right. Which is why a lot of people who try to stop all of the things that they were doing the night before, they're never successful at it, because you can't. You've got to ease into it,
mm-hmm.
just like you said.
It can be painful.
Yeah, it can be very painful.
Yeah.
You can get sick. Okay, well, this is really fascinating stuff, because, I mean, a lot of people are going to be going around thinking they have to give something up, and we're here to tell you, ease into it.
Ease on down the road.
Now, right, that's good. Now, okay, so when you talked with people on this show who promoted a plant-based diet, and you've talked to many of them, a lot of the times I've heard people say things like giving up as opposed to other phrases. And I feel like when you adopt a plant-based diet, when you go vegan, you're not giving up anything. You're actually opening up and receiving.
You're opening up.
And
exactly.
Receiving so much more variety out there.
You're shedding the false notions that
right.
you've been trained to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're open, like you said, to...
And one of the things you're really open to, the wonders, but also you're open to understanding how magnificent a machine this thing you're living in is.
Oh, yeah.
Your body. Because all of a sudden, you get clarity. And that's the thing that I understand every time I have a late night piece of chocolate. It's like I have clarity about what that chocolate does to my system. I mean, it really does remind me that this is powerful stuff. And I would sit and eat bar after bar after bar, not realizing what it was doing to me. And now a few squares and I'm just aware of how it affects me, as well as a cup of tea that has caffeine in it, or a cup of coffee, or, you know, and it's nice because you're back to doing things naturally within moderation.
I have my own mission of what I want to share on this show and in my life. And I've said this many times before. I come from a place of wanting to reduce pain and suffering. Mm-hmm. I want to get people off the animal because there are so many species on this planet that are innocent and are treated horribly. But I want to do that from a place of joy, bring people to the light, bring people to yummy, delicious food, no deprivation, you feel better, and you want to, and it's infectious, you want to share what you've discovered with everyone else, and I'm waiting for that viral effect to happen. I think it's starting to take off where we get some momentum going. But also, I also believe it opens up our minds to seeing the world the way it is.
Right.
And we have been manipulated and brainwashed and influenced over centuries.
Right.
Longer than that.
Right.
And it's really hard to shake that off.
Yeah. For example, why do humans, for the most part, not all humans, I'm talking to one that doesn't believe this, but, and this is a heavy question, and, you know, but I'll ask it and send it out there to our listeners. Why do humans, some humans, think that they are better than the animals? And is there an answer to that? There's a discussion of speciesism, but it's a hot topic now, especially. So why is that? I know you've interviewed a lot of folks on this show, Melanie Joy being one of them, who wrote a book called Why We Eat Cows.
Why We Love Dogs.
Why We Love Dogs.
Eat Pigs and Wear Cows, something
yeah,
like that.
Why We Love yeah. Dogs.
And
why
she
we love dogs.
Came up with the concept of carnism.
Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows. Anyway, yes. There's a lot of people talking about this. I'm not sure a lot of people listening today or people out there have even heard of carnism or Melanie Joy or any of the other people that are talking about speciesism. But, and I know it's a very controversial subject to compare speciesism with racism. A lot of people are very sensitive about that, so I'm not going to get into it. But these subjects are being discussed, and right here on this show, as a matter of fact, you have had guests that have talked about it. So, but I guess the simple question, and I'm a simple guy, that I'm asking is that I asked myself after the veil was lifted when I adopted a vegan lifestyle. That was, well, why, how did this get started in the first place? Why do we feel like we're better than these sentient beings? What made the human being want to go and mess with a grazing cow and
sure. There's a lot of people that have asked this question. There's a lot of books on the subject. I recently interviewed the author of The Meat Question, and he got into it. I'm thinking of some other programs I've had on this show about that question.
Which are all archived, by the way, at Responsible
yes.
Eating and Living.
And I even go back and review them.
Right. They're great.
Because there's so much information in there. But it's linked to many things. a long time ago, before the internet, before a lot of things.
That's a long time ago.
You know, we only had what was around us, and we had our own consciousness, and so it was all about the ego and ourselves, and we didn't even realize for a long time that the Earth went around the sun. There are still people who are promoting the flat Earth theory, so right. We've got some issues as humans and what we believe, but I think capitalism has a lot to do with our current view of the world. And over time, we have learned to use property to advance. And so some people have taken advantage of that property. And so women and other people have been used as slaves, and animals have been used to work for certain people as property, and it advanced certain people, and then they had power and they took advantage of that power. And over time, we all fell into the hierarchy, and you can't help but kind of believe that you have a place.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's right, but over time it becomes...
I think religion has played a big part of that as well.
Oh, sure.
And that's probably why when you say you're not a religious person, I always follow it by saying you are a spiritual person. But religion is an organized belief system, right?
Yes.
That is there, I think, to keep people in control because they want to keep people...
Well, the thing that turned me off personally was when I was told that as a woman,
right,
I wouldn't be able to do certain things in the religion.
Exactly.
There was actually a prayer that the men would say, thanking God for making them a man. And the woman would substitute that line and say, thank you for making me, I don't know, I'm translating it, I don't remember it exactly, but making me the way, you know, what you wanted me to be.
Right.
But not a man.
And
that was like, I'm sorry, I'm not signing up for this. I don't believe in this. Done.
No, but again, my point being that was a way of controlling the women. And
yes.
Making them subservient to the men.
Yes.
Right? You didn't have a penis, therefore...
There was a lot of things I couldn't do. I was the best student in my class, but I couldn't get the honors.
Right.
Yeah.
So I get it. So then maybe it's just another way to keep people where the elders think they need to be. And so what we're saying is, again... When you adopt a plant-based diet, when you go vegan, your world will open up and you will see how, when you connect the dots, a lot of these things, I mean, this show is called It's All About Food, but a lot of the things are, the reason we call it It's All About Food is because it is all about food. I mean, people were hungry, people needed to eat, people saw something walking around out there, they killed it, they skinned it, they ate it. Okay, and so, but now we're in a little better position where we don't need to do that.
Some of us. Yes.
Right.
I got to make a disclaimer.
Mm-hmm.
So I truly believe, and I know you do too, that when people adopt eating a vegan diet, a healthy whole food plant diet, minimally processed, etc., they will feel better and their world will open up. And I like to think that that will also affect people's outlook on the world and their politics. It doesn't happen all the time.
No.
Because there are a lot of angry vegans.
Right.
And some of them do not have the same philosophy or politics that I have.
Right.
And we argue a lot.
Right. So it's human to argue. But the thing that scares me, and I use that word scares me, or that term scares me loosely. But the thing that worries me, I should say, is people aren't willing to accept that arguing is perfectly okay. They really feel that if they don't win the argument, then they need to destroy the person who they're arguing with.
That's a really good point. I think people are afraid to have an honest dialogue these days.
Yeah.
I was telling you recently, I've started to engage a little more on the Facebook.
The Facebook, yeah.
And I'm always polite, never emotional. I don't call people names. I don't attack.
Right.
But I will, if somebody says something that I don't agree with, I ask a question. Why do you feel that way? How does this affect you personally? What else do you recommend? Questions like that. Are those offensive?
No.
No, but right away, people respond back very defensively, calling names, saying whatever it is bullshit. And we're really at this unhinged state now.
Right.
Where we don't know how to have an effective dialogue. We don't know how to communicate right. anymore.
And that's the thing about being what I consider being an American is that you can disagree with me and I will defend your right to disagree with me. But some of these folks that are out there now, you know, engaging, I guess you could say, with you on social media or even in public, that they are seriously out to destroy you if you disagree with them.
So what we're saying to you is that we are here to have a conversation.
Right.
And we're happy to have a conversation with you. And if you don't agree with us, you can either call in and have a conversation live right here, or you can send an email to info@realmeals.org. And I want to share a recent comment with someone who wrote in and asked a question, and we had a little back and forth. So the question had to do with people who have lived over 100. And this particular person wrote in and listed five centenarian doctors who have all lived over 100. And his question was, what's the ideal diet? And shouldn't I base what I'm doing on these few doctors that have lived over 100? I thought it was an interesting question, and I wrote back and said, yeah, there's something you can learn from these people, but it's only five people, and we can't really base everything on this very limited sample.
So why don't you read to us what you said, because I thought it was fascinating.
Oh, thank you. I will.
So read the letter, and you can keep the person's name out of this.
Okay.
And then read your response,
good.
And then read their response.
I will.
This is a good thing
I think it is good. So the question was, the best health, diet, and exercise would be learned from what a centenarian and doctor, both in the same person, have been doing, as they must have been doing something right all these years. Age 105, Dr. Shigeaki Hinohara from Japan consumes a small amount of milk and olive oil every day for smooth skin and smooth arteries. Age 104, Dr. Ephraim Engelman, famous rheumatologist. Age 102, Dr. Fred Kumaro, PhD in food chemistry and professor of food science. Age 107, Dr. Geraldine Branch, gynecologist. Age 114, Dr. Layla Denmark, pediatrician. And he writes, all five centenarian doctors eat a proper balanced diet in the proper food groups. All five take no vitamins or supplements, since no living creature does either. All five eat a small amount of animal products 3 times a day for health reasons and longevity. All five never sold any products to the general public. If you know of anyone with better advice I should follow than the five listed, let me know their name, age, credentials, and track record. Okay, I thought that was a really interesting message. And I was happy to respond to it. So I wrote, thanks for your question. Yes, you can learn something from this small selection of people, but you cannot assume that what they chose would be the ideal for everyone or even most people. From a scientific point of view, you need to compare a much greater number of people on a particular diet over a long period of time and compare them to a control or a population that does something different to see the effect. It's difficult and expensive to do. Epidemiological studies are helpful because we can learn about a specific population and their health. We also have learned a lot from people who were reasonably healthy on their original country's diet, and then they came to the United States and adopted the standard American diet.
Sad.
And got all the chronic diseases that Americans have. From this, we have learned that food has a greater impact than environmental and genetic makeup. And things have changed a lot in 100 years from when the people this person mentioned were born. That contributes to their well-being. We are exposed to many environmental toxins now, and the quality of food has degraded. The lifestyle for many has changed as well, and this has a cumulative effect as well as impacting the health over generations. I believe that vitamin D and B12 are essential for many people today for many reasons. And when exposed to environmental toxins and bad diets, specific supplements can aid in healing. And personally, I choose an all-plant, all-organic, primarily whole food diet because from the research I have seen, it's not only the best health, but kind to animals and gentle on the planet. And as all my listeners know, the person I admire most for the best information on diet and nutrition is Dr. Joel Fuhrman at drfuhrman.com. He's only 66 years old, and I hope he lives to at least 120. Only time will tell. And the writer wrote back and said, okay, I like the response, as it is reasonable. Dr. Fuhrman seems decent. And he continues writing, and this is what I wanted to get to. I wrote the same thing to other people interested in diets and some vegans and other types, but they did not respond as they might think. I am here to argue, debate, teach, convince, sell something, etc. I asked a simple question, and you wrote back. I am actually here to learn, but I suppose others think I am here for a challenge or something, but not the case.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the point. Everybody's like unhinged. Everybody's on the edge, poised, ready, and defensive.
To attack.
And we need to calm down and have sensible conversations.
Yes.
How do we do that?
Again, as an American, I am here to defend your right to disagree with me. And that's, I think, what we've lost sight of, is we don't feel that way anymore, or at least some of the folks that you're referring to, the ones who are out to destroy you if you disagree with them. And we've lost the ability to disagree.
Here's another thing. So I'm engaging on the Facebook. Right. I'm being brave. I'm not being afraid. And I'm being polite and trying to help people wade through this massive amount of information online. And a lot of it is disinformation.
A lot of it is out there exactly. To confuse and deflect and anger.
So one woman was engaging bravely, and she started giving me these YouTube videos to watch. Now, right. I don't like to watch a lot of videos because they take time. I prefer to read a report or a transcript because it's faster and I can get to the meat of the subject, no pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
And this one particular, but I said, okay, I'm going to watch a few minutes of this video. The title actually said, just watch the first 3 minutes if you don't want to watch anything else. So I said, okay, I'm in 3 minutes. And this woman in the video was spewing emotional nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing she said, it had to do with immigration into Canada and food. This show is called It's All About Food. And one of her arguments against immigration was that Canada already imports most of the food they eat. And this is just wrong. And you just go, you can Google it and get all the statistics. Canada grows a lot of food. And they make more food than they eat. And
And that's the disinformation that many people will just take as gospel.
Exactly. And another piece of that is some of that food is raised to feed animals to feed people.
Right.
And if you take animal out of the equation, you can grow a lot more better quality food for more people.
Right. And it's delicious food. And a lot of people don't want to hear that because they want their meat. And so what we're here to do is not to preach, but we're here to give you an opinion. And the opinion is backed by a lot of facts. And these are actual facts. These are science.
Not made up facts.
Not made up facts.
Yeah.
So, and again, I'll just respond to my own statement by saying there are hundreds of interviews that Karen has had with experts in this field, and they're all archived at Responsible Eating and Living. So check them out. And
once again, if there's a video or an article or something that has moved you and you feel compelled to believe it, and maybe some of it is against what some of the things we say here on this show, let's talk about it.
Right.
Let's have a conversation.
That's what we're all about, is having a conversation.
Yeah.
And it'd be fun to have a conversation with you, because I'm sure Karen gets really tired of having a conversation with me.
No, never, Gary. It's always fun.
Yeah. And if you disagree with us, that's great. You can feel safe here.
That's the point.
Talking
yeah.
with us.
I have to admit, I tried, I don't know how many years back. Who remembers? Who's been listening to this show a long time? I had a couple of people on the show from a very different perspective. And we had a few conversations. I totally disagreed with everything they were saying. And I found I was embarrassed because I found I got in that confrontational way. But I didn't think it was beneficial for this program.
Right.
So if I ever do that again, I will come from a different place. I don't want to be confrontational. I want to be open and conversational.
Right. I'm going to make a little plug for a film that we made here at Responsible Eating and Living that I think six people saw. It's called The Lone Vegan. And you've probably heard Karen talk about it. But that was a situation that we documented on film when Karen was asked to go speak to 200 cattle producers in Urington, Nevada, and they wanted a vegan on the panel. And so we went on this journey to Urington, and Karen faced off with 200 cattle producers. And so she's very well skilled now at this, and so you are safe to chat with her, because she's preached to the fire.
That was the bottom line. Yeah, they listened and liked me.
They listened and liked you, and you sang the national anthem, and they ended up by saying, well, you have more balls than our bulls.
Yes. Now, you can watch that film anytime. It's at responsibleeatingandliving.com/lonevegan.htm.
Right. And it was preaching to the fire. And that's what we're talking about here. Sometimes, you know, it's nice to preach to the choir, and a lot of folks, you know, unfriend the people that disagree with them on social media, and they just keep that group of people around them that agrees with them. But what we're suggesting is, let's try and let that wall down and, you know, engage with all the citizens that are around us. And yeah, sometimes it's uncomfortable. Sometimes it's even, it even gets you sick once in a while. But if we don't make an effort to reach out across the aisle and embrace those that disagree with us, then we're never going to move forward.
It takes courage.
Courage and kindness.
It takes courage and kindness. That's Cinderella's mantra, right? Have courage and be kind.
Have courage and be kind. You know, and it was the anniversary of one of my personal heroes, the death of someone that I'd like to read a quote. I'm a curator of quotes. And those of you who are fans of Ghostbusters, the original series, will remember Harold Ramis, who did much more than Ghostbusters. He was an actor and a director and a writer. One of my favorite comments of his, which I will read to you now, as I think apropos to what we're talking about. He died on February 24th, 2014, I believe at the age of 69. But he said, "You have to live your life with a certain blind confidence that if it's your destiny to succeed at these things, it will happen. If you just continue to follow a straight path, to do your work as conscientiously and as creatively as you can, and to just stay open to all opportunity and experience. There's a performing motto at Second City, to say yes instead of no. It's actually an improvisational rule. It's about supporting the other person. And the corollary to that is, if you concentrate on making other people look good, then we all have the potential to look good. If you're just worried about yourself, how am I doing? How am I doing? Which is kind of a refrain in Hollywood. You know, people are desperately trying to make their careers in isolation, independent of everyone around them. And I've always found that my career happened as a result of a tremendous synergy of all the talented people I've worked with, all helping each other, all connecting and reconnecting in different combinations. So, identify talented people around you, and then instead of going into competition with them or trying to wipe them out, make alliances, make creative friendships that allow you and your friends to grow together, because someday your friend is going to be sitting across a desk from you running a movie studio. Now, of course, that was Harold Ramis talking about the business of show, but you can easily adapt that to life and surrounding yourself with people that agree and disagree with you, but making alliances is kind of what we're talking about here.
Yes. Because always be nice to people on the way up because you don't know who you'll see on the way down.
Yeah. But also you learn something by keeping open to everyone's opinion. Sure, you can have your own opinion, but those cattle producers, that was a metaphor for how rigid people can be about their own beliefs and thinking what they're doing is actually good for the animals.
Well, that's why it takes so much courage to change, because it rocks people's foundations. Foundations that are built on exploitation and abuse, and we don't want to see that.
No. I mean, there were a lot of people, a lot of those cattle producers actually thought that they were helping the animals.
Sure.
By keeping them on feedlots, by forcing them to eat food that they normally don't eat, by injecting them with hormones, and then slaughtering them or shipping them out to be slaughtered. They never really did any slaughtering on the feedlot. They just fattened them up.
My mother brought me to our family physician when I was 15 years old, and I said I didn't want to eat meat. And this incredibly smug, slim tan doctor, who really looked like he thought a lot of himself, his answer to me was, it's okay to eat cows because when we eat them, we give a lot more life to more cows. More cows get to live, get the opportunity to live because we're eating them. And that was the end of his explanation.
Yeah.
What? So, sure, a lot more cows get to live. They're, like you said, their moms get artificially inseminated in a very unpleasant way. They get ripped away from their mothers. Their lives may not be very nice, but they get to live. How nice is that?
They get to live a very short time on this planet. And there's a great book that I think you even spoke to the author of the book, where we get to see farm animals, or what we call farm animals, actually living a full life.
Oh, yes. Isa Lesko.
Yeah. Didn't you talk to the author of that book?
Yes. I'm going to pull that up right now. I have two copies of it, actually.
Oh, what a wonderful book. And what it does is it shows you an animal like a pig, for example, that its tail wasn't clipped off. It actually has its tail intact.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first of many eye-opening, brilliant photographs in this book. It's just wonderful. You actually get to see a cow living its full life, not slaughtered at a young age.
Yeah, it's Isa Leshko.
Isa Leshko, yes.
And she has a book. It's mostly photographs.
Mostly, and they're beautiful.
Allowed to Grow Old.
Allowed to Grow Old.
Yeah.
So when that doctor told you more cattle get to live, what the doctor didn't tell you was that more cattle get to live a very short life.
A very short, abused, unpleasant, unnatural life.
A very painful life.
Mm-hmm.
A very unhappy life.
And then you get to eat all of its flesh with all of the hormones it excreted after living a pained and scared life.
Right.
And those hormones can't be good.
No. So if you want to give up anything for Lent, give up meat and just keep giving it up. That's my message on this Fat Tuesday.
That's good.
And another thing that we talk about a lot, you and I, as a team here at Responsible Eating and Living, is how to rename some of these sayings, like kill two birds with one stone. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you have said over the years was free two birds with one key.
I'm not the author of that, but there's lots of expressions like that that we need to re-script. Right.
So how would we re-script Fat Tuesday?
Yeah, now, I didn't come up with a name before we started this program, so I can't say I have a response for that.
Yeah. So, but you did. You said...
Fun Tuesday?
Fun Tuesday. Right.
Yeah.
Something like that. So if you have an idea of how to re-script Fat Tuesday, because we don't want to fat shame anybody or anything or even any holiday, help us out here. Once again, you can write to us at info@realmeals.org. info@realmeals.org.
Okay, one of the things about Mardi Gras and Fat Tuesday is food.
Right.
And everything, at least here in the United States, is influenced by New Orleans.
Cajun food,
and
right?
And the Cajun food. And we're not going to give you any recipes for Mardi Gras, but if you want to make anything Cajun,
right,
just add Cajun spice.
Yeah, what are those Cajun spices?
Yeah, I had it up here just a moment ago, but it's pretty simple.
Remember the Louisiana chef on, what was his name? Oh, the Louisiana chef. He had a wonderful way of speaking. Was it Justin? The PBS chef, Justin Wilson?
Okay, well, you look that up. Cajun spice.
Yeah, Justin Wilson.
Is a combination of garlic powder, paprika, black pepper, onion powder, cayenne pepper. I'm going to say cayenne pepper, because you want it to be spicy. Oregano, thyme, red pepper flakes. And there's probably, based on different areas, variations on that theme. But you could take any chili and throw Cajun spice on it and feel like you're ready for Mardi Gras. With a little cornbread, you're good to go.
You know, I'm going to do something tonight, I think, with a little Cajun spice. Because I used to really like to do blackened food. I'm sure a lot of people out there do that too. Where you rub that Cajun spice all over something and then you put it on a hot, hot cast iron grill and let it blacken on the outside. And I'm going to try that with some tofu, I think. Mm. Yeah, or even you could do that with vegetables. You could do that with broccoli. You could do that with a lot of really cool things. Blackened.
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And then, of course, red beans and rice. They call it dirty rice. And, you know, there's also gumbo. Lots of wonderful gumbos. There's a lot of vegan recipes for gumbos and just Google Mardi Gras food, vegan Mardi Gras food. You'll find it out there. It's really a lot of fun.
So we just have a few more minutes left. And I wanted to give an update about what's happening here at the Responsible Eating and Living headquarters with regard to food. So one of the things is that we are real here at Real, responsibleeatingandliving.com. We walk the walk. And I like to share what we do here at home in our home headquarters. This week, I've got sauerkraut fermenting in the cabinet.
Right.
And it's about a week of waiting. I think I'm ready to harvest it and put it in the refrigerator. I could wait longer, but I think a week is about a nice time. I've got almonds that I have soaked and skinned, and I'm going to turn them into yogurt tomorrow.
Yes.
And I've got something I haven't done in a really long time is I have sunflower seeds sprouting, and I'm so excited about them. They take about 9 days. It's a long time.
Yeah, I call it the aquarium. You have the sprouter. Tell everybody about our sprouter, because it was from a friend of yours who had a company who's no longer with us, right?
Yes.
He passed away.
I have a Fresh Life sprouter, and it was recommended by the Sprout Man.
The Sprout Man, yeah.
That was Steve Meyerowitz, who unfortunately passed away a few years ago in just a horrible car accident.
And you spoke to Steve
many
times.
I love chatting with him, and he had wonderful recommendations about sprouting. You could find more about him. His sons are running the organization now. It's sproutman.com. But I did buy – he inspired me to buy one of these Fresh Life sprouters. And what I liked about it was it enabled me to make my favorite sprouts, sunflower sprouts, which I otherwise found hard to do. Other people recommend making sunflower seed sprouts in dirt beds. And I really didn't want to go there.
Right.
But I could do it just with water with this Fresh Life sprouter. It also enabled me to make broccoli sprouts, which are also difficult to sprout otherwise. You want to make sure that you have seeds from a certified reputable source.
Right. Make sure. That's very important.
Yeah. And you might want to listen to my archived interviews with the Sprout Man at responsibleeatingandliving.com. And if you need help navigating them and you're interested more in sprouting, let me know at info@realmeals.org. I'll send you the links. Happy to do that. So I'm looking forward to
info@realmeals.org. Remember that.
info@realmeals.org. I'm looking forward to harvesting my sunflower sprouts because they're the best on salad.
On salad. And where's your favorite salad that has sunflower sprouts?
Oh, Dharma's in Santa Cruz.
Dharma's in Santa Cruz, California. They make the greatest salad and they top it with sunflower
sprouts. So, yeah. So, I mean, one of the reasons why the sprouts like that are expensive is they take a long time to grow. They're not easy to grow, but you can grow them at home.
All right, so who's in the news lately in the entertainment world? Well, Harrison Ford says he no longer eats meat and dairy. Harrison Ford has cut meat and dairy out of his diet. The star says he made the switch for his health and for climate change. Go, Harrison Ford.
Yeah, I like that all those sci-fi movies, either in real life or in the story, like Star Wars. Everybody's vegan in Star Wars.
Right.
Not Star Wars, Star Trek.
Star Trek, right.
Yes. Anyway, but here we are in reality, and I want to bring everybody back to reality and say that it's time to end the program.
Wow, we talked a lot today on Fat Tuesday.
We did. So have a great Fat Tuesday.
Yeah, go out and have some fun tonight, and then go vegan tomorrow.
That's right. Everybody have a delicious week.